This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Hello, all you beautiful people. Welcome to the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. I'm your host, Alice Wong. My guest today is Veena Lakshmi Pimsta Simarasena, a writer, cultural worker, teacher, and trainer based in the Pacific Northwest. This episode is about care work, and it's also the name of Veena's new book that came out in October 2018, titled Care Work, Dreaming Disability Justice. We talked last fall about the meaning of care work and disability justice, and how people practice both in their everyday lives. Please note, throughout the interview, the term DJ refers to disability justice. Are you ready? Away we go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, Leah, I am so excited to have you back on the Disability Visibility Podcast.
Thank you, Alice. I'm so excited to be on it. And congratulations on your book. It's incredible. I really love that our books came out at the same time.
I feel like it's been a big year for both of us. And
yeah.
Is this really, I feel like all the universes, all the planets are aligning. And it's such a delight. You and Stacey Milburn were on this podcast in episode 6. Talking about care work and the labor of queer disabled femmes.
Mm-hmm.
And do you mind, I guess, introducing yourself and just sharing a little bit about who you are for folks who are just learning about you for the first time?
Sure. So my name is Leah Lakshmi Piyapshna Simarasena, and who am I? I am a queer, disabled, non-binary femme writer, of Berger and Thummel Sri Lankan and Irish Roma ascent. And I'm a writer. I started off as a poet. I have 3 books of poetry in print, and I have a 4th one coming out this spring, 2019. And I'm also the author of the recent book, Care Work, Dreaming Disability Justice, which is a collection of essays, and the memoir, Dirty River, A Queer Femme of Color Dreaming Her Way Home, which is my kind of disabled survivor femme of color memoir. And with Ching-Yi Chen and Jai Dulani, I co-edited a book called The Revolution Starts at Home, Confronting Active Intimate Violence in Activist Communities. And I'm kind of giving myself away. And the next year, I have a book coming out that my friend Ajaris Dixon and me co-edited called Exploring Transformative Justice, A Reader and Toolkit. So yeah, I'm a writer. I do performance art with Sins Invalid, which a lot of people know of as one of the places that disability justice really started, and a really fierce, disabled, queer people of color performance collective. And yeah, I also identify as autistic, neurodivergent, chronically ill, and physically disabled. And I live in Seattle, Washington.
Great. Thanks for that. Today we're talking about care work, and right now, as a recording, it's December 2018, and your book, Care Work, only came out a few months ago. And I want to know a little bit about the origins. Like, how did this book, kind of the idea of it, first come about?
Totally. So, I've been physically disabled and chronically ill since I was 21, which is 1996, 1997. And right around the time were Sins Invalid, and a lot of disabled Black and brown queer folks were starting to organize, like Patty Byrne, Mia Mingus, Stacey Milburn, Leroy Moore, lots of other people. Saw this thing and I was like, oh my God, this is the first time I've seen disabled, kinky, queer, revolutionary Black and brown people doing writing and stories that feel like my life. And it's a long story short, I got involved with Sins, I started performing, and I was really present for a lot of moments of disability justice organizing and activism and cultural work in the Bay. And while I was there, there were just different places where I started writing different essays, some of which started off as blog posts, that really blew up, and, you know, some of which were really like tools that I wanted to share. So I wrote this whole piece called Making Space Accessible is an Act of Love for Our Communities that was like one part fragrance-free, like, you know, productless, and one part talking about access as a form of love and like cross-disability access, you know, especially in like communities of color that are disabled. And that really, that blew up on the internet, you know, like there were a lot of times I was really hanging out in a lot of parts of the disabled internet and just writing stuff. And then, you know, fast forward to 2016, I didn't think it was going to be focused around disability justice at first. I just thought it was going to be a little bit of everything that I'd written. But then when I started working on it, the more time I spent with it, the more I was like, oh, actually, yeah, there's a few essays that are not all disability all the time, but this is really a book of essays that's focused around disability justice in one way or the other. And that was the summer of 2016, and then Trump got elected. We were all both like, okay, so we're afraid that fascists are going to round us up and kill us, or we're going to lose all, you know, the ACA, Medicaid, the ADA, like everything that allows us to stay alive on a rights platform. So we were all terrified. But then, you know, our whole sick and disabled QDPOC community and friends was like, let's get together, let's talk, like, let's build our network, like, let's take care of each other. And we were just sitting in, you know, whatever accessible living room we had, being like, what are our resources to share with each other? So I was working on the book, and then there were some moments where I was like, is this really what I should be doing? Like, should I be like leaving the country while I still can? Should I be, you know, going underground? Like, what? And then I was just like, no, you know what? Like, this would already be a useful book, but like really at the core of why I want to write this book, it's, to me, I think of it as like a toolkit that's both archiving a lot of moments of disability justice organizing and activism and just moments in time that I've been around for the past decade, so it doesn't get erased when Facebook deletes all of us. And also, I mean, you know, Alice, before we started recording, we talked a lot about the idea of like crip wealth, that instead of the deficiency model, like as sick and disabled and neurodivergent and mad and deaf people, we have all of this wealth and all of these skills and all of this knowledge that able-bodied people have no idea exists. We've already survived so much shit. We have so many survival skills. And so the book became like a compilation of like, here's all this stuff. I want to write a book that really lays out this is what it is. Especially because, you know, Patty Byrne and many other people have said, like, disability justice was invented by Black and Asian and working class and trans white people to be like, we don't want a single issue disability rights movement anymore. We want to talk about how prison is a disability issue, Zionism is a disability issue, you know, police murder of Black and brown disabled people, that's a disability issue. We need all of our identities in there. We need leadership by disabled Black and brown people. We are sick of the whiteness and racism that's been too much in mainstream disability studies and disability rights. I want to have something in print that writes down that record of like, this is who invented it. It is so important to know that Patty Byrne and Leroy Moore and Mia Mingus and Sebastian Margaret and Eli Clare were the five people who sat down and were like, okay, DJ, we're, you know, let's talk about what this is. What kind of movement building framework this would be? Mm-hmm. And I also was just like, as we face, you know, incredible fascism and white supremacy, which, as we know, has always had ableism at the core of it, you know, mixed in with, you know, racism and everything else and queerphobia. I was just like, I need to want to have a toolkit where people can pick it up and be like, here's some crypt tips.
I clearly see the value of a book like this. But I'm really curious about, like, how you pitched it. And, you know, it's published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Mm-hmm. And can you tell me about, I guess, the process by which you either approached publishers, mm-hmm. and also the response from, especially if you pitched it to more than one place, mm-hmm. you know, the response from publishers, and, you know, how did this book get greenlit?
In some ways, I had a really lucky break because, you know, part of what allowed Arsenal Pulp to say yes was that, so my book before this, Dirty River, had a really, really hard time. I mean, I've always had a hard time getting published. You know, Dirty River, you know, which is this like queer, chronically ill, survivor, femme of color memoir. You know, I had been trying to get it published for 4 or 5 years. And I just like, and it was like, independent press has said no. Like, mainstream press has said no. People were like, oh, it's too experimental. It's not experimental enough. I absolutely ran into people who were like, oh, you know, it's too complicated a story. It can either be a disability memoir or an abuse survivor memoir. You can't have both. I had people who straight up told me queer people of color don't buy books. No one is going to care about this. And then, you know, and so when Arsenal Pulp said yes to Dirty River, they were kind of the last press on my list that I tried. And I was like, okay, if they say no, I'm going to raise money and self-publish it. But then Arsenal, which, you know, has this wonderful queer Asian writer, editor, Brian Lamb, at its head, he was just like, I really love this book. I love the story. I don't want to dumb it down. Like, I don't want to simplify it, rather. I love the voice. And he published Dirty River. And then it was a success. And then it was interesting because I was kind of like meandering along working on the book. And it was February of 2017. And this, and in the middle of all this, like February winter, no money moment, I got an email from somebody who worked at a major publisher in New York and was like a, you know, young queer person of color. And they were like, hey, I really love your work. Love Dirty River. I'm a huge fan. I'm just wondering if you have any other books. And I was like, oh, I had given up on mainstream publishing ever publishing me. And I actually was like, you know what? My role models are Gloria Anzaldúa and Leslie Feinberg and people like that who never published on a major press, and they're giants of literature, and they changed their world, and they changed the world, and they kept their integrity. So I was like, you know, but when this person wrote and they were, you know, POC and queer and all of this, and I was like, okay. And then we talked and they were lovely and they were really supportive. I felt I had to ask myself a lot of questions about just the ethics of doing that. Through the process, it became clear that, like, basically essay books don't sell, like, basically, like, major publishers are corporations, and what they care about is it going to make them money? What I was told is that if you want an essay book to be published by a major publisher, you have to be prepared to kind of posit yourself as an expert and the authority on this subject, and that no one's ever talked about this before, and you're special. And I was just like, this is a collective movement. I think no matter who I was, I'd feel, no matter what my identities were, I'd be like, that does not feel ethical. I do not want to become the star of DJ. That's fucked up. But I also was like, I'm light-skinned, I'm ambulatory. Like, no, like, this is not feeling good. And I had conversations with other people in community. So between that and just really wanting to resist the star system, I went back to Arsenal and I was like, I got an offer. And Brian was really sweet, but he's like, look, we will always keep your book in print. You can pick the cover. You can have creative control. These are things that a lot of writers don't get given. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to go with you. You know, as a disabled writer, when I talk to other disabled writers, when we are in, like, anything but disability-specific space, we are running into a publishing world, even if it's a social justice publishing world, that is just, like, everyone who reads books is able-bodied. You know, they're all normative. No one's ever thought about disability. No one's ever, you know, like, no one has any idea this shit exists. No one's interested. Like, the only disability story you can think, that editor can think of, like, so many editors, is either, like, an individual show and tell of, like, you know, it's inspiration torn, it's tragedy, or it's death. Or it's somebody who's not us writing about us. So the idea that we actually have communities and cultures is, like, it's like speaking Martian to people. And I want to be really clear. I really do not mean this as any kind of disability is the last acceptable form of oppression bullshit, because that's bullshit. And there is a similar assumption of, like, universal ableness. You know, it's all unconscious, but I was like, I am not writing as a disabled subject who is translating and explaining myself to able people. I'm writing for other disabled people of color, first and foremost, and everybody else can listen in, and that's fine. But I am not going to change the language. They showed me the cover and they're like, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, it looks good, except that subject thing that you have in the top left, it says social sciences, health studies, LGBT. And I was like, I don't want it in health studies. I don't want it being next to some book on how to cure your gout. And then I was like, what about disability studies, disability activism, queer studies? And I'm just like, right, like, until there's a disability section and until it's more than three white people, you know, people aren't gonna, like, it's a chicken or the egg thing where people are gonna just keep drawing a blank about what is disability. So there's a lot of that fighting. And then it got out there. And what I'll say is that, like, I think every time I publish a book, you work on it for so many years in your office, in silence and in isolation. And then it's getting ready to go in the world. And you're like, I don't even know if this is good anymore. Maybe it's a piece of shit. And you're also like, maybe people will notice and maybe people won't. And so in terms of, like, getting it out there, it's been so interesting. Cause, like, I did touring stuff, and And now that I'm trying to be a middle-aged crip, I'm like, no, you know, I'm really not getting to pneumonia for 2 months. I'm gonna really do it at my own pace. But it was really tricky to be like, I'm going to do the tour on crip time and I'm going to take breaks and I'm only going to do so much. And people were like, can you come here? Can you come there? And I was like, I'm doing a total of 3 weeks of touring and that's it. That is it, with breaks in between. And even then it ended up being too much because like I was like, oh, I'll add on this. But then, you know, what happened was is that like I, you know, every event I went to pretty much was sold out. You know, I went to Western Massachusetts on a Monday and there were 200 people on a Monday. And I was like packed. And I was like, I didn't necessarily expect this. And then the thing happened, like, and this is not a tooting my own horn thing, but like the whole first run sold out in 6 weeks, which never happens. And
toot your horn, toot it.
I'm going to toot it. And like, but the thing that's so interesting is that like, I want to be a part of the historical record. Like I want it to be, I'm like, this shit, I'm like, I'd love it if I got nominated for National Book Award. Like as disabled writers, as disabled intersectional writers, we're making history and we should get all those big things, you know? But so I didn't get most of that. Like I got like, you know, like around halfway through like the fall, I was like, oh shit, I've gotten like no reviews. And then like Otto Straddle, Bonnie Amore, who's a really amazing, chronically disabled, non-binary, brown writer, did an incredible review that really got it. And that was great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been a handful more, but like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that like, there's been this amazing response. And it's also been interesting because the book sold out partly because of touring, but also there were so many sick and disabled folks who could not make it to an event, who just bought it because they're at home and they want to read a book about disability justice. So it's kind of like the spoony way of touring where you don't have to hit every city and every town because your readership is sick too and they're not going to come out necessarily because they're tired. I mean, so that was really interesting. And I'm so proud of being in spaces like the Disability and Intersectionality Summit in Boston and Asian American Writers Workshop, which, you know, long time like Asian community art space that just really threw down and is, you know, that rarity in New York. It's an accessible space. They have an elevator, they have couches, they have, you know, good seating, they have a bathroom. It continues to heartbreak and amaze me the way in which like non-disabled POC activists will just continue to ignore us, you know, and just completely be like, disability, what disability? Disability justice, what's that? Like, it just really breaks my heart. And I'm like, you know, guys, like, we're running out of time. Like, you know, the whole West Coast was on fire for the past 2 years, and it's disabled people who are showing everyone else how to survive. Like, you really need to listen to us. But, you know, you can only do what you can do.
Yeah, you know, I try to post it. You know, promote stuff about your book and it, but I
thank you.
But I do put it on my Facebook group. You know, the thread underneath the comments are just like, you know, I love this book. This book is like, you know, what I've needed all my life. I think, you know, that we all have these kind of moments in our lives where books will be like, there's a certain book that'll just completely change our orientation.
I hope so.
And I feel like this is a book that's going to have that effect for a lot of people. So I was wondering if you could also talk a little bit about the actual term care work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How did you define care work? Because I think most people are, you know, familiar with caregiving, they're familiar with healthcare, but healthcare, but care work is something more. So how would you try to explain that to somebody?
So there's this theme of disability justice in general, and there's also this theme of like care. Like I kind of saw it in my head at first as like care/work. Like when I think about DJ, what is it? And I'm just like, well, it's the radical ways that we care for each other and that we fight to care for ourselves as disabled people, as disabled intersectional people. And that is work, you know, that is labor, that is work, that is some real shit. And I don't know, I mean, I think in my head, I just was like, when I think about the collective work of disability justice as a project, whether it's the performance art of Sins Invalid or three, you know, I always think of like, you know, in Toronto, where like, I think it was right after some of us had been in Detroit for Creating Collective Access, and there were like four disabled and sick femmes of color. And we were like, do you want to get together? And like, maybe we can all be in bed on heating pads and have tea and talk about our lives. And we were so tentative. Like, I think about that meeting of like four, you know, sick femmes of color talking about our lives. Or I think about like, you know, the one action I think of where there's a blockade of Oakland Police Headquarters, and there was a whole bunch of elders and disabled people, and there was one person in a power chair who was like, I'm going to lock myself down in front of the main entrance, because, you know, it's going to be a really bad optic if the cops are photographed beating up a white, maybe older looking power chair user. You know, I'm going to use this. I just think of all of those moments of disabled work where we are passionately caring for ourselves and each other in our future. And how it's emotional. You know, it's not just a bunch of abstract ideas and politics and like analysis. It's like, I mean, my friend Billy Rain, who, you know, has, you know, was doing disability justice before it was a term, you know, they were disabled and Arab and a ritual abuse survivor and, you know, living with lung tumors and MCS as a person of color back in like, and writing about it back in the early 2000s, like the really early 2000s. And I remember being on panels with them where, you know, we're always like, you know, what do you do to support disability justice? And they were like, make a sick person soup, make a disabled person soup, bring someone lotion. Like, I just think of like all of that, you know, going back to the stuff that me and Stacey were talking about, those like little huge moments of seeing each other and witnessing each other and showing up for each other and like doing stuff like, I mean, bringing soup to somebody is not seen as some hot shit, you know, activist, you know, woo, you know, I led this rally of 10 million people moment. But it's the kind of thing where like, we can't do the rally if we don't have the soup. And sometimes the soup is more important than the rally. Because, you know, it's a disabled, I think it's a disability justice phrase to say to exist is to resist. If we, just by virtue of us living, you know, we're resisting. And that's important. So this is kind of where I was coming from with the title. And then it was like, when I wrote my essay, you know, on like fair trade, you know, femme of color, emotional labor and care work, I was like, right, like some people were using emotional labor in this really kind of, I don't know, single issue way. And I was like, no, you can't talk about this without talking about disability. You can't talk about this without talking about the ways in which Black and brown people have been forced to labor for free, whether it's under slavery or indentureship or plantations or like, you know, all of the things, you know. And that led me to something I knew a little bit about, but the National Domestic Workers Alliance in the United States, their hand-in-hand campaign where it was like elders and disabled people who work with personal care attendants and the personal care attendants, the home workers, all being like, we need to be a united front because personal care attendants need good money and paid vacation and sick leave and unionization. And disabled people and elders are like, we need a bill of rights for ourselves so we are not abused by our care attendants. And we need the infrastructure to make it so that we can all access care attendants so that we're not forced to pay subminimum wage because that's what DHSS will pay, you know? And I remember reading about it and being like, this is so powerful. This is a political organizing alliance around care. And it's saying that feminized, disabled, Black and brown labor is real fucking labor. And it's real. So then that way it's used. And I think that that's a really important definition for me. And then I've also come to see that like there's been some academic texts that use the term care work and not really embedded in academia. So I completely missed that. I apologize. It's all of that. And it's also, I just, you know, something that me and Billy talk a lot about are like all the ways in which as disabled people, and in particular as disabled femmes of color, we are expected to do free labor and, you know, just be, and never complain about it and never be like, no, I'm not doing that today. I am not explaining this, you know, and, or I would like to be compensated in some kind of way, you know, even with a thank you, bringing soup, crisis counseling someone, or the way Stacey talked about the Crip doulahood of being like, okay, you're a new power chair user. Here's how it works. Or, oh, you know, you're crazy and you think you're going to go into inpatient. Cool. Here's some tips. Or like, you just got even more like unmobile. So here's different ways that you can like work with care attendants that work, you know, all of those things where it's like, yeah, it's that work.
Well, I just want to say that I appreciate that, you know, you're writing about one form of care work is protecting yourself. Yeah. And you write this, and I'm just going to quote you because I just love these lines so much. So you write, it's okay if you build in boundaries. It's okay and good to build relationships to where you are loved, not just for your labor. You are a redoable and also limited resource. And I'm like, fudge, yes. And, you know, times infinity. Because, you know what? We all have our limitations. Do we all feel this urgency to do what we can, especially, you know, under this current administration? I just want to say how much I treasure you for who you are. Then I thank you for all that you do. And just, not just all that you do, but just your spirit and who you are.
Thank you. Alice, that means so much, truly. I feel the same way. I treasure you, the stuff that you've done with DVP the last few years. Thank you so much. I treasure you.
This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project and online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. You can also find out more about Leah on our website. The audio producer for this episode is Eureka D. Beta. The introduction by Latif McFound. The theme music by Wilter Sports Camp. To subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google Play. You can also support our podcast for $1 a month or more by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening. Did see you on the internet. Bye. Was you would if you were in sweatpants.